Yo, welcome back to the Ox. We in this bitch. Yeah. I wanna start today with one of the truly most unbelievable articles I've ever read. And I don't mean unbelievable in the sense that I normally use it. Like if I see a great catch, a SportsCenter top 10 play, I'm like, oh my God, that was unbelievable. Like this is not unbelievable in a, you know, the meaning that it's taken on, like good or exceptional. This is like unbelievable in the true denotation of the word. Like I literally didn't think this article was real. I thought I was reading an Onion article. And it turns out this actually happened. This is a real person that said real things. And this occurred. And let's get into it. So I call this section, I'm going to call this, you know, section of the podcast, The Honest Racist. And the article is titled, A White Teacher in Texas is Fired After Telling Kids in Class That His Race is the, quote, superior one. That you can check out this article on CNN. There are a bunch of articles written about it. But let's dive into this honest racist. So a middle school teacher in Pflugerville, Texas, which if you listen to the podcast Kill Tony with Tony Hinchcliffe, you have heard Pflugerville many times. Brian Redban lives there, apparently. No connection to this article, but I've never actually seen the word Pflugerville written out, and apparently it starts with a P. So that is a surprise. A silent P in Pflugerville. And this guy did not stay silent about what he had to say. So let's continue. A middle school teacher in Pflugerville, Texas has been fired, district officials said Monday after video was posted to social media showing the white teacher tell his students his race, quote, is the superior one. Last Friday, November 11th, Pflugerville ISD officials, I guess that's their police department or school department, something, were made aware of inappropriate conversation a teacher at Bowles Middle School had with students during an advisory class. As of Monday morning, November 14th, the teacher in question is no longer employed by Pflugerville and we are actively looking for a replacement, the statement says. Videos of the conversation in question were posted to social media last week. In one video, the teacher can be seen saying to his multiracial class, deep down in my heart, I'm ethnocentric, which means I think my race is the superior one, as students audibly react both on and off camera. A student off camera asks, so white is better than all? The teacher replies, let me finish. Is this Kanye West? Yo, let me finish. I said, I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to let you finish. The teacher replies, let me finish. I think everybody thinks that. They're just not being honest about it. After some other discussion in the video, a student asks, you said you are a racist, right? I did. Yeah. I'm trying to be honest, the teacher replies. It is unclear what was discussed before and after the recording of the videos. CNN has not identified the person or people who filmed these videos circulating online and has not obtained the videos. Again, I'm laughing because of how fucking ridiculous this is that someone would not only believe this, but say this out loud. Like, I know there are people out there that genuinely believe this, but they typically wear hoods and meet in bars and are pretty secretive and don't want to, you know, they're not at CVS getting on a pulpit and saying that whites are the superior race, or they're not saying this in an auditorium full of middle school kids. They're usually, you know, they carry a card on them for a special club and they go to meetings once a week and they don't talk about it and they use secret code words so that they don't get entangled in the racist label. They want to maneuver through society and still practice racism in secret. This is so out in the open, like flagrantly out in the open. It's so absurd. That is what I'm laughing at. Like, the level of openness of this guy being racist is so absurd. It's hilarious. CNN has obtained an audio recording of a portion of the conversation from a parent who said their child is shown on the videos. In the audio, a student asked the teacher to repeat himself. The teacher says, "I said, I'm a racist. That's what I said. Do you know what that means?" Students' responses overlap, and the teacher continues, "It means that deep down in my heart, I think my race is the superior race. That's what it means to be a racist." This story continues. The question, blah, blah, blah. "We want to reiterate that this conversation does not align with our core beliefs and is not a reflection of our district or culture." That's the school district. But yeah, like, what's so crazy to me is that the teacher stays in teacher mode while he's explaining what a racist is and why he is one. Like, this is the same way that you would explain to a middle school class what democracy is. Like, you go in front of the kids, you have the textbooks open, and you say, hey class, we're talking about democracy today. Do you know what that means? Do you know what democracy means? It is a system of government in which each individual voice gets to cast a vote for the people they want to lead this country at the congressional level and the federal level and the state level, whatever it is. He's in teacher mode. He's like, "Hey, kids, today we're going to talk about racism. I'm a racist. Do you know what that means?" And these kids just have Mein Kampf textbooks all laid out on their desk. If you turn to page 43, Timmy, will you read the first sentence? "A racist is..." Like, this is the most outlandish shit I can't even comprehend. I guess, like, I've never encountered this type of individual. Like, this must be so confusing for the kids because they're encountering something that is horrific and despicable, which is racism, and it's packaged in this thing that is admirable and cool, which is radical honesty. Like, it's like someone's punching you in the face and saying, "I'm sorry," at the same time. "Oh, dude, I'm so sorry. I'm doing this. I love you. Like, he's just like, "I'm going to be completely open and honest with you about who I am, and I'm going to show you who I am at the core. And that core is racist." Like, what? Like, I can't imagine what the scene was with these kids. Like, are they just sitting there? Are they asking questions? I'm imagining, like, how confusing, how frustrating, how ridiculous that would seem. I don't even know what would be running through my mind as an eighth grade student nowadays, because kids nowadays have much more information. They grew up on social media. I didn't get a phone until I was in sixth or seventh grade. That was a flip phone. There was no Twitter. There was no Instagram, barely YouTube at that point. And I wasn't digesting as much information as the average seventh or eighth grader today. Middle schoolers today are pretty fucking smart. Like, people give the younger generation a lot of shit because of being woke or being sensitive, but they're fucking smart. I live in a building where there are a lot of younger kids. There's parents that have like teenagers and stuff. And, you know, occasionally I'll talk to a kid in an elevator or just like hear them talking to each other. And they talk way smarter than how I talk to my friends when I was their age. They're talking about, like, there are eighth graders talking about Ukraine. Like, I didn't even know Ukraine was a fucking country when I was in eighth grade. Eighth grade kids are now giving geopolitical takes to each other in school, and they're well informed. They are aware of issues. They have this wide, like all-knowing intellectual tablet in their pocket, which is the iPhone. You can search anything you want. And so I'm imagining, you know, all of these kids, they know that racism is wrong. Obviously, that's something you know. You learn it hopefully from your parents, and then you walk through life and your teachers reinforce that, your experiences reinforce that racism is wrong. And then on top of that, these kids are the wokest generation ever to exist. They're not oblivious. They're aware of social issues. And you have this teacher who's like, I'm a racist. Like, I am against everything that your generation and whoever, I'm against everything that any decent person stands for. And I am standing in front of class and I am being ridiculously open with you about it. I am opening my soul to you. And that soul is rotten. That soul has principles that are rooted in the most terrible evils to ever spread across the face of the earth. But he's being upfront about it. And that's so weird. It's wrong, but there's like something deep down respectable about it, because that is better for society. Like, if we have a society with racists in it, which is true, and I believe that segment of society is much less than, you know, people on Twitter would have you believe. I think if you're anyone who's ever traveled the country, if you travel the world, you speak to people, you know, I've spoken to hundreds, thousands of people, whether it's on a podcast or just going to another country, being a person who's curious about others' experiences, I have gathered that it's not really common to meet a racist. I don't think I've ever met someone who struck me as a racist, whether they told me or not. I maybe one person, but even then, I would give that person the benefit of the doubt, because it wasn't like an overtly racist interaction like this. They could have racist beliefs, but it wasn't clear to me. But even so, thousands and thousands of people I've met, I've talked to, never really met a racist. So the percentage that I gather is pretty low. And racism does exist for sure. And I don't know if it's possible to eradicate it in a free society. If you give people freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom to feel a certain way, a very small percentage of people will have hauntingly terrible beliefs. And one of those beliefs is believing that your race is superior. I don't really remember where I was going with this point, but the So if racism exists, which it does, and a certain small percentage of people will always be racist, wouldn't it be better if those racists were honest? Wouldn't you rather have open racists so you could see the targets, the people who you needed to be aware of and avoid and be cautious of for spreading their ideas? Wouldn't you rather have that than someone who was rising in the ranks of a corporation, of a university system, and they kept their racist beliefs secret, and they tried to dog whistle instead, because that is something that goes on where people aren't out in the open like this guy, but instead they push for policies and they say things that can kind of attract people of a racist ideology. They're not coming out and saying, you know, where are my racists at? Like, where are my dogs at? They're not coming out and, you know, literally saying, I am racist and my base can approach me now. They're, you know, the dog whistle, it can only be heard by the people who may share those views. It's something that's not obvious. And there are racists that are of that cloth where they secretly hold terrible beliefs. They would never discuss it with anyone who they didn't trust. They wouldn't discuss it with non-racists. You know, they may be part of secret societies, clubs, whatever, where that you can freely discuss your racist thoughts without getting recorded and things like that. But they would never come out in the open. So wouldn't you rather, if there is a silver lining to this story, it's that this guy is what racists should be. It's that this is the better, if you have to have racist people, this is the type of racist that would be better for the world, that you just come out. It's like, he almost reminds me of like if you gave a racist propofol. Is that the truth serum? Like whatever the truth serum is, where you get injected and then some guy's interrogating you and he says, I know you were with him last night. You're just in a daze. You're like, yeah, you know, I love you. I was with him and, you know, we killed his brother and then we stole his money. And it, like, you're just kind of in this haze and you're just telling the truth. I feel like one of the kids... One of the kids was suspicious that this guy was racist and they put some truth serum in his coffee or in his apple or whatever. And he bit into it and he's kind of in this lovey-dovey racist daze where he's like, yeah, I'm a racist. You have questions? Like, yeah, white people, here we go. Yeah. And now you know, now he's fired, which he should be. The question is, how many teachers think this? How many people in positions of educational power and financial power and political power, how many people think like this that are keeping it secret, that are not honest about it, that are not open about it? This is such a weird dichotomy. That is why this story is so fucking shocking and unbelievable, is because this is such a weird pairing of personality traits to be radically honest and radically racist. You don't see that too often. It's crazy. Do you think that when the teacher was approached by the superintendent and the superintendent's like, listen, we caught you red-handed. We know what you said. You're gone. Do you think the teacher tried to play it off like he was doing a role play situation with the kids where he's like, oh no, you didn't see the beginning of the video where I was like, hey kids, we're gonna do a role play right now. This is to protect you if you ever meet a racist. Okay, so I'm gonna play the racist. I'm obviously not, but let's say I am for the exercise. Okay, 1, 2, 3, go. I'm a racist. Do you know what that means, kid? And then he's and the teacher's like trying to get out of it, saying the whole thing was a role play exercise with class. And he's trying to teach his class how to confront a racist in society properly. And the superintendent's just like, dude, shut the fuck up. Like, this is like, what else could you say to get out of this? There you'd have to say either, yeah, I was drugged, which still would be weird to like be on a drug that makes you admit things that are to admit things that you don't actually believe in. I don't know if that is a symptom of drugs, you know, to my knowledge, to the drugs that I've been on, at least they make you more comfortable and lower your inhibitions, so you're more likely to share the thoughts that are on your mind. I don't know if drugs create things within me that aren't at least there a little bit, but who knows? Maybe there's a drug like that. Or you have to say it's a role play exercise. I don't know how else this guy could have gotten out of it. I don't know. This is what happens. Speaking of drugs, this is what happens when you have a true racist on shrooms. This is like someone who is an actual racist, like to the core, and they're secret about it. They're quiet about it. They've been living in the shadows. You know, they read Mein Kampf. You know, they believe that they're the superior race, and they've joined secret groups, and you know, they're in the KKK. They have their friends that no one knows who they are. Their racist persona is anonymous, and they live that way. And they're not living their truth. And then this guy, this teacher, goes to Joshua Tree, takes a heroic dose of mushrooms, just takes 5 grams to the fucking face. And the mushrooms tell him, they're like, be who you are, live in your truth. You know, there's the sun opens up, the sky is beaming down upon him. And God just says, be you, be a racist, be yourself. You are a racist piece of shit, and I made you. And every so often, God fucks up, and I fucked up, but you are who you are. Tell the world. And this guy just, he's coming down off mushrooms, driving back from Joshua Tree, and he's like, yeah, you know, I've been hiding for so long who I truly am. I'm a racist. I'm going to go right into that class, and I'm going to tell my kids on Monday, I'm a racist, kids. Do you know what that means? Well, let me tell you, it is my truth. Like, that is what this feels like. Like, he had some existential moment where he's been suppressing it for years and years and years. And finally, like, he either started meditating or he started doing psychedelics. And because drugs, again, I don't think drugs make you better. I think they enhance a version of you that you are at your core. And this guy, whether his parents were racist and raised him to be racist, whether he just went down a fucking Facebook rabbit hole and got converted and there was a spark of racism there, and then the Facebook YouTube rabbit hole just fanned the flames of that fire, and then something happened, like, so I want to know what happened the weekend before this dude showed up on Monday and just started opening up his racist heart to the world. What happened? I would be interested to know, what was the moment where something inside him said, like, you just have to start living your truth, and the truth is that you are an absolute shitbag racist. Like, that's what I want to know. That's the most curious part of this whole thing, is like, not because racism exists, it sucks, it's horrible, but like, what is responsible for the dichotomy of the way this guy carries himself versus his beliefs? Because it's so fucking fascinating. But yeah, there's a radically honest racist walking around, and fuck, like, at least we know. At least if you're honest about it, we know. You're still a piece of shit, but you're marking yourself for the world to see. You're like, listen, I'm a shithead. I'm racist as fuck. I'm just going to let you guys know. Just put my hands up. Raising the white flag, ironically. This is the flag that represents the superior race. And I'm waving it. I'm surrendering. I'm a racist. You got me. Have you guys been following this climate change stuff with the destroying the art aspect of it? I know climate change is such a huge fucking topic, but there's been a rash of people going into museums And as a form of protesting climate change, they are desecrating art. They're throwing tomato soup on Van Gogh's and Monet's and gluing themselves to paintings. Just a bunch of different, you know, quote unquote, activists are putting themselves in these positions where they're destroying art as a form of protest. And obviously the easy thing to say is, yeah, that's dumb, it's stupid, it's a waste of time, money, and energy, it's not right to destroy art, especially you know, something that a lot of people get a lot of joy from. People love museums. Like, that's the easy take to have. I think what's more interesting is why this is happening. Why did they choose art? Because there's a reason. There's a reason why people aren't gluing themselves to Apple computer. Like, why are they not going into Apple stores and gluing themselves to MacBooks, you know? Why are they not going to gas stations? Gas and oil places, you know, just like the stereotypical things that people think of when they think about climate change. Like, go to a gas station, go to an office building of a fracking corporation. Go, like, why are they not gluing themselves to the doors of Exxon Mobil's building in New York City or whatever? Why are they not gluing themselves to like a Sunoco? Why are they choosing art? I think that has to say something. That has to contain some important information. Why, if you are an activist, if you're trying to change something, would you be destroying art? So let's think about it. Let's go through the thought process. So there's a reason behind it. Art is something that takes a lot of time. It most things, you know, now with NFTs and some of the pieces I've seen recently where people are just nailing bananas to canvases, art does not take that long. I mean, some NFTs take a long time. Some of them look like they got spit out in 2 seconds, but I don't want to say all NFTs are just like these quick transactional things. Some of them are beautiful, but a lot of valuable art takes months and years to complete. So there's that aspect of it, that something is being destroyed that takes a lot of time. It's something that's traditionally valued. It's something that has a high cost. A lot of wealthy people invest in art. You know, the value of paintings in museums are in the hundreds of millions of dollars. It's crazy how much something is worth, like a Picasso painting or a painting by Van Gogh, like painting by Da Vinci. The price is astronomical. So you have the amount of time, you have the price, you have something that's on display. So it's in public. So why the art? I was trying to think about, like, why do you go after art? Why are you not going towards something that has more to do with climate change? Like, if you're going to attack it, you might as well go towards the source. And this is the best reason that I could come up with. I think that art represents, I mean, I don't think that art, I know art represents beauty. It represents things that words can't communicate. And it also represents accomplishment and discipline and spending a large amount of time doing something and doing something incredible, learning a craft, doing it over and over again, thousands and thousands of repetitions, of alterations, and the end result is something beautiful. It's something of a lot of value, but it's also something just of a lot of aesthetic value, aside from the monetary value, just something like so fucking beautiful. People line up just to stare at it. people travel, you know, they get on planes to look at canvases that someone painted 300 years ago. And it's such a fantastic accomplishment. I think that the type of people that do this, and it's not the entire generation of, you know, Gen Z activists. I don't want to, I hate painting people in boxes. It's not a big group of people, but I think that a lot of it tends to come from Gen Z. And it seems like the sense of accomplishing something, like the sense of hard work for a payoff, is almost offensive to the type of person that would do this. Because when you destroy something that took so long to build and so many people value, that is an instant way to get attention. There's no work involved other than buying a ticket for the exhibit, buying a can of paint, and exerting the energy it takes to lift your arm up to splash that paint across the canvas. So there's little to zero effort involved. I think that the discipline of working on a craft and the highest levels of discipline, mastery, like the things that make you go, holy fuck, like you see it and you just think about everything that went into it. I think that is offensive. That is just so, it's like a symbol that represents everything that activist, that person who's throwing this can of soup, is not willing to do. Like, it's so offensive to them. It sticks in their face, and they don't want to, they don't want to reckon with the reality that the most interesting people, the people that do great things, the people that other people want to hang around and being cool and being talked about and getting attention, you know, like, you have to do work. You have to do hard work. You have to be willing to put in time and going unrecognized and doing a lot of things in silence. And that is not the only reason why this is happening. I think there's just like a primal, like, look at me lashing out, I want attention, just a superficial level to it. That's not this well thought out. But I think deep down, there's something in this type of activist that hates hard work, that hates the type of person who has discipline. Like, it's not fair, almost. It's almost like they're turning accomplishment into a class. Like, there's a class of people that recognize how valuable discipline is, and that if you find something you want to be good at and you decide, hey, for the next 10 years, I'm just going to do as many repetitions as possible. I'm going to be thoughtful about it. I'm going to be disciplined. I'm going to work on my craft. I'm going to hone it. I'm going to shape it. You know, I'm going to record multiple podcasts every week. I'm going to go do stand up 5 nights a week in New York. I'm going to paint 5 nights, you know, every day. I'm going to make a painting. I'm going to start an investing YouTube channel, make a video every day, whatever it is. That is something that this type of activist does not have within them. There's something in them that finds that so offensive, and it's both people get attention. You get attention for being really fucking good at something, and you also get attention for doing something superficial that's just a quick act. Like, and you see that a lot with school shooters. Like, 30 seconds of their life gets them in people's mouths forever. Their name gets thrown around on the media. Their picture goes up everywhere. They know that they can just go off for 30 seconds and the rest of their life they'll be remembered. I think there's a similar type of psychology going on with these type of activists, where it's almost like this clash of the dichotomy of attention. There's deeply deserved attention that has its foundation in a practice, in a discipline, in a craft. and people recognize that and you get really fucking good over time. It's not an instantaneous success. It's you know, what's the saying? 2 Chainz says it took me 10 years to become an overnight success. It's you're working in silence for so long and then you pop and people see you and everyone goes, oh, dude, you're such an overnight success. And it's like, bro, I've been recording podcasts for fucking 15 years and people just found out about it. So it's like you have to just work on your craft in the shadows. Then there's this other type of attention that's more superficial. It's more empty. It's vapid. Doesn't feel as good. You get a quick dopamine spike. And it's the type of attention from going viral. It's the type of attention for committing an act that causes other people to go, and it feels good. It's like it, kind of like watching porn. Like you get off on it. It gets your dopamine up. It's a good, you know, stimulating thing, but it's not sustainable and it doesn't last and you're in and out. You're in and out. You get a spike. I'm sure when those kids were, they threw the tomato cans on the painting, they glued themselves to the painting. I'm sure they got a really big adrenaline rush. I'm sure they were like getting a lot of feel good feelings. Like I'm doing this. I'm really doing this. And then there's this rapid plunge after. And you're left without a craft. There's no, like, you can't, it's not a good thing to get good at destroying pieces of art. Like, I guess you could try to do, like, if they went to a different museum every day, they'd eventually get caught and thrown in jail for a long time. But, like, it's this very superficial, quick spike of a release. It's not a craft, it's a release. And then eventually the dopamine wears off and you look for something else and you value attention over valuing getting good at a skill. And it's interesting. I think that's what lies at the center of this recent type of, you know, activist desecration. And also, I understand the rage. I understand feeling upset and feeling angry at something and wanting to make a change. So I do think it comes from a place of legitimately caring about an issue. I think these kids do care about climate change. And maybe they're scared. Maybe they see these stunts go viral on TikTok. It's like a virality competition. And instead of taking the road of, okay, I care about climate change, what's something I could do to help climate change long term? Maybe I go to school, I become a nuclear engineer. Nuclear energy is going to be a huge part of what gets our planet off fossil fuels. That is something that is, you know, widely talked about, that nuclear energy has a stigma because of nuclear plant meltdowns, nuclear bombs. But nuclear energy is actually very safe, and it is truly the only thing we have right now that can sustain an entire planet, because solar and wind are just not going to cut it. It's like a supplement. It'll be a supplement to nuclear. So if you see that, you could go, okay, I'm gonna study nuclear energy. I'm gonna become a nuclear engineer. I'm gonna help build the future of our planet. I'm gonna build power plants. I'm gonna monitor something like that. You could, you know, get into wind, get into solar. You could, you know, build electric cars. You could start a science communication channel on YouTube about climate change and say, every day I'm going to release a video about something involving climate change. But instead of getting good at something, these kids are like, fuck that. I don't want to get good. I just want to get viral. And then this shit happens. But I do think it comes from a good place. I don't think it's just the kids' fault. I think that there is a misguidance or miscommunication with the parents and teachers as well. Like, what are teachers saying to this kid or these kids that are doing this? You know, if you have teachers in school that are just fucking saying like, yeah, I'm a racist, like, let's do this. Chances are that's not the only shitty view in the school system. It's probably, you know, if you have a category of people that's underpaid and a lot of people aren't willing to be teachers, you get some shitty candidates. And I'm sure that, you know, there may have been some influence from teachers. There may have been some influence from parents. Social media is a big aspect too. But this isn't an isolated thing. It's happening a lot. Like if you look up climate change art, you'll see dozens of articles about people doing this shit. So it's like a, it's something that's infected the mind of these type of activists. So it's not an individual problem. It's something on a systemic level of like, why are these kids buying into the fact that this is the answer? This is the way to do things. There has to be something going on with the parents or the teacher, like someone in a position of power and a position of giving wisdom and advice to these kids is not doing their job. They're not saying, hey, you know, maybe don't destroy $100 million painting. Maybe, you know, read about climate change. Maybe, you know, start a blog, write how you feel, you know, before you go out and destroy a painting, write it out and go through the thought process. And then if you still want to do it, you know, maybe try to go do it. But I suspect that if someone was talking to these kids and was like, hey, you know, write it down. My mom always used to say that. Like, if you're feeling angry, write it down. Write why you're angry. And then like magic, the anger just leaves your body. I remember I have vivid memories of me being so angry at my brothers, I wanted to punch through a fucking wall, and I would go in my room and I would just start writing on a piece of paper, like, I hate my brother. He did this to me, and now I want to. And as I'm writing, it just flowed out of me. So I don't know. Maybe people just need to write more. Who knows? I want to end off with another wild story, an unbelievable story, with that same sense of unbelievability that I was talking about before, where it's more of like, I can't believe this happened, than this is a good thing. It doesn't involve races, which is a plus, but this is a personal story. This actually happened to me. So I went to the DMV a couple weeks ago, which is normally the most boring experience of my life. Not worth talking about at all. You walk into a gray building, you sit down, you get your number called, you walk up and you're at the counter and you leave, and it's just an entirely plain experience. Nothing worth mentioning. So this was not that. I went to the DMV to get my license renewed. It expired. I was sitting in line. I pre-registered for an appointment, which meant that I could go to the place where people already had a number. So it was much more quick. And then all of a sudden, the numbers go down. The system just goes down. And these women take charge and they say, hey, the system is down. We're going to read out ticket numbers. And if you have this number, if your number starts with this, you go in here. You go in this section if it starts with this. So there, every ticket number started with 1, 2, 3, 4, something like that. And that determined the order. So these women very quickly did a great job, and they got us all in line. Like, it was very straight to the point. Everyone knew that you had to get in this section if you had this number. And then if you had the next number, then determined which order you were in that section. And then these women were directing us, hey, this window's open. You have 4, you go here. Your number's 4-3, you go here. Your number's 4-4, you go here. And then that took care of itself. And we kind of snaked through the rows, and it was very obvious. The order was very obvious. No one, there were no questions to be asked. So I finally get up to the window. I'm at my window, and I'm in the process of handing over my paperwork for the new license. I filled it out beforehand to save some time. And I've been at the counter for about 5 minutes, just this woman checking my preliminary information. And all of a sudden, I'm standing facing the woman at the window, and I feel a tap behind me on my right shoulder. I then turn to my right, and no one is there. And then I turn back to the window, and this guy is talking to the lady behind the window where I was just talking. Like, he literally tapped me on the shoulder, did like the ghost peekaboo shoulder tap. And then as I look to my right, he came around the other side and just started talking to the lady. And he goes, "Hey, I just had a quick question. Can you?" And I'm looking at this woman. I'm looking at the counter and I'm looking at this guy in disbelief. Like, I think it's a joke. Like, I can't even comprehend. I haven't had someone do that to me since I was in like eighth grade. Like, it was the same, like someone's trying to make you look like you're sitting in your seat in class and the kid behind you taps you on the right shoulder and then he ducks behind the left and you look over your right and then he's like, "Ah, got you." But yeah, all good fun. This guy, he's probably 40, 45 years old. This guy did the middle school DQ out shoulder tap to me in the DMV as I'm in line getting my life. He tap, tap. I look to my right. This dude fucking slips, goes back to my left, says to the woman at the counter, like, "Hey, I just need a," like the woman would just like handle his thing. And props to the woman. Like, I didn't even get a word out. I was like, "Is this," like, I was so stunned. I was like, "This is actually happening. This guy's going for it." Cause I was about to be like, "Hey dude, you can't just fucking shoulder ghost me. We're adults here." And the woman behind the counter said, like, "Excuse me, sir, there's a line. You know, you're gonna have to wait your turn." And then the guy was like, all right. And he tried to fucking shoulder ghost me. And I saw that guy when I walked in. So I know he was there for the whole process when the numbers went down on the screens and when these women got in front and said, "Hey, you know, everyone here with this number here with it." So I know he was there for that. And this guy was, what's hilarious is this guy, and bold, by the way, may I say, like, this is a bold thing. This guy was sitting somewhere in line behind me, saw me go up, and then was waiting there. And something in his mind said, fuck this line. Let me try to ghost this. Let me do the shoulder tap trick. Let me tap this guy. He's going to look around the right. I'm going to come around the left and just snake his turn in the middle of talking. Which honestly is offensive to me because he was waiting for someone to do that to. I seemed like the idiot that would fall for it. Like, this guy thought I would just get shoulder tapped and be like, "Huh?" And just look around and see him talking to the lady and be like, "Oh, well, I guess I'll just wait here while he finishes and this guy steals my spot. Oh, well, he got me. Oh, shucks." That is the most offensive part, that he was waiting for someone, and whatever I was wearing or what I looked like, he sees my fucking posture. I don't know. I thought I looked, I think I look like, you know, I got some muscle. My posture is not terrible, you know, decent looking. I feel like I look like I can carry myself okay. Something about this guy, he saw me and said, "Oh, this guy. This guy's a fucking idiot. He's going to fall for it." And he got me with the initial tap, but I turned back around. The lady quickly shut it down. And I was standing with my mouth open, like, what? And so, yeah, that happened. DMV shoulder tap. It was, you know, I've never had anyone do that to me at an adult, let alone a strength. Like, this wasn't a friend. You're not out at a bar and someone taps me on the shoulder. I look around and a friend like takes my beer and chugs it. Like, this was a complete stranger. We're both, you know, I'm sober. He seems sober. Like, this was, he was not drugged out or like just like a homeless guy wandering around the DMV or anything. This was like a professional man that did it. So that's why I was so taken aback. I was like, wow, this is on his list of strategies to walk through life. That is incredible. If you guys enjoy the podcast, there are bonus episodes that I release every month on auxoro.supercast.com. I put out full-length bonus episodes. I also put out these mini-sodes that are 10 to 15 minutes in length scattered throughout the month. I also do AMAs. You can submit questions or topics for me to talk about on the podcast, on this podcast, The Aux, and also my guest podcast, The Auxoro Podcast. You can submit questions for guests. $5 a month, $4 if you sign up for the year. Go check that out. Also, if you can support with money, that is totally fine. I get that. I would just ask that you go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and a comment, and also go to Spotify, leave us a rating. It helps so much. I can't describe how much it helps with searches and stuff. Like if you're in Apple Podcasts or you're in Spotify and you search something, like if you search The Honest, if you search racist in Apple Podcasts and I title this episode The Honest Racist, the more ratings and comments I have, the higher I'll show up in searches. So that's why it helps so much. You know, it does boost my ego a little bit, which also feels good. So yeah, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, auxoro.supercast.com to subscribe to Auxoro Premium if you'd like. And yeah, I'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening.
Peace.